Have you ever heard the quote, building trust is a process. Trust results from consistent and predictable interaction over time. This is a quote by Barbara White, and it's the concept of today's discussion. And today's discussion is going to be on procedural justice. You know, as I was looking for the right quote for this, as we know, we start all podcasts off with a quote. The other quote that I saw that I had to add to it was, trust takes years to build, seconds to break, and forever to repair. And what does this have to do with today's topic? Well, as you remember from the last podcast, we started talking about the Guardian mindset and the President's Task Force report. We also talked about the history of law enforcement and the Kerner Commission to the shooting death of Michael Brown in Ferguson, the Ferguson report, and then the President's Task Force report. And you remember I said that I really like the concept of the President's Task Force report and the pillars that it will provide and some guidance for law enforcement agencies to evaluate the way they do business. So what I want to do is I want to start breaking down the pillars and just give you a little bit of Guardian mindset, a little bit of knowledge about what you could take with you and why these words are so important. Again, I'm attorney Eric Daigle. I'm the principal of Daigle Law Group, LLC, and I am the host of this podcast. So we talked about the Guardian mindset and the importance of this concept to policing endeavors, whether you are brand new to the job, whether you're a supervisor, or whether you're a brand new police executive. And so this week we're going to talk about two words. And I got to tell you, I think these words are pretty much the most important words to people that use them correctly. And they are the words that are used the most incorrectly that I can see across the country. And that is a concept of procedural justice and police legitimacy. Well, if you've just come out of the police academy, one thing I can probably guarantee is that you had some fair and impartial police training. And hopefully you had a training program that I've been involved in for a while that was designed and implemented called Fair and Impartial Policing. And it was designed by Dr. Lori Friedel down from Florida. And if you want to check out her website, and the website is fairandimpartialpolicing.com, it's a training program that started years ago. I just took a booster update about 6 months ago. And the reason why I took the booster update was, more importantly, just to begin to continue to understand the research that's being done on procedural justice and on fair and impartial policing, and more importantly, on police legitimacy. But one thing I will tell you, for all of you that are in law enforcement, if you plan to go sit for a promotional board anytime in the near future, you better be able to have a discussion about fair and impartial policing. You better be able to have a discussion about procedural justice. And you better need be able to have a discussion about police legitimacy. And you know, the one thing I want to start with is that these are not new concepts. They're just new titles to the same concept. These are ways that we've been doing policing going back decades. Nothing's changed. It's just now that people come out and come up with these terms, and these terms are things that people use whenever they want to. Like if you turn on, I love when I turn on the news and this news anchor that knows nothing about law enforcement starts talking about, oh, procedural justice and police legitimacy. And I said, you don't even know what those mean. And more importantly, most of the people that criticize us and use the words procedural justice and police legitimacy, they might know the meaning of the word, but they have no experience on how to ensure integration of procedural justice in an external and an internal application. Well, let's just kind of put it right down to what that means. They don't have any experience as police executives working with their community. And see, one of the things that we all know is that good police executives, good supervisors, even today, good officers, one of the concepts that we start off with right off the bat is that we have to fulfill the Peelan principle of the police of the public and the public of the police. And we have to work hand in hand with the community. This is not new. This is not a new concept or idea that somebody came up with. This is a concept or idea that's been around for decades and is kind of the way we do business. But listen, they want to throw some new words on it. So if you want to throw words, we can give them words. And unfortunately, that's the concept that we're going to talk about, is you got to know what these words mean. And so let's focus on what those words mean. If you, at this point, if I've piqued your attention and you read the President's 21st Century Policing Report from 2015, and we're going to talk about Pillar 1. You've in Pillar 1, which was as in the concept of pillar one is procedural justice. And more importantly, it is building trust and legitimacy is how pillar one is identified. So what does it mean? Well, here's what we know. At the heart of the 21st Century Report is this idea of procedural justice. They made it pillar number one because it was very important to the message that was being sent post the shooting death of Michael Brown in Ferguson and the final version of the President's Task Force Report, which is, as I explained to you in the last podcast, did not come out the way they expected it to come out. It came out with a recommendation that their failures are failures in the criminal justice world. But the procedural justice probably makes sense as we start today's episode and discuss just what the task force committee meant by coining this phrase. Well, what is procedural justice? Basically, it speaks to the idea of a fair process, how people's perception of fairness is strong and how people's perception of fairness is strongly impacted by their quality of their experience and not only the end result of the experience. And that's the important part here. Yes, police legitimacy and procedural justice, in theory, in what we talk about, some research has shown, yes, we can arrest people and they can feel like they were just in the process, that they were treated fairly in the process. I don't know how many people in prison are going to run up and say, I'm happy I was arrested or how I was arrested. But I will tell you that there is a study that was done at Yale University here in the state of Connecticut on police legitimacy. And it was very simple and it identified the fact that when they had time to realize that they were in jail for a period of time and there's nothing they can do about it, they were willing to speak freely about how they were treated by the police. And most of them, a large percentage, said they were treated fairly in the process. So if procedural justice speaks about an idea of fairness, the theory has been applied in various settings, including not only, and this is very important, not only law enforcement to community settings, but how about supervisor to employee relationships, right? This is not all about how we treat people outside the blue wall. This is also about how we treat people inside the blue wall and employee relationships within the education, within the organization. How about educational settings? How about the criminal justice system as a whole? And I'm sure there's some procedural justice arguments going on now with the criminal justice system and the fact that people's cases have been extended out for years and years through COVID. But what we know and what we can talk about is most of the research or most of the procedural justice research that has been done on focusing on this police to citizen interaction. And I think it's only because it's a shiny object and it's what the world wants to hear. They want to hear, how do we make relationships better? Well, come on, people. You know how to make relationships better. If I want to make my relationship with Jake better, I do so by interacting with him. I do so by being truthful and being honest with him. I can give him good criticism and bad criticism, but if I can do so in a level of earned respect, that's procedurally just, that we're fair to everybody we deal with. So here's a scenario I see all the time on the procedural justice discussion. Think about this setting for a moment. A driver is stopped by a police officer. Well, we know that doesn't happen anymore, right? It did happen at some point. It's not happening now. We know it's very interesting. You know, you will meet Chief Charlie Reynolds in our next episode, but he sent me a great picture this week. And they said it's not about interaction, it's about stupidity. You know, you reduce police officers, crime goes up. You tie the hands of police officers to do their job, crime goes up. This is not any brilliant research thought process. If you don't stop cars, people with bad intentions that have drugs and guns and are committing crimes, they are free to do their business without any fear of being interacted with. I mean, one of the things that we talk about history and being 30 years in the job, one of the things I say all the time is, you know, don't forget that simple traffic stops have solved some of the largest crimes in this country. Whether it's the stop of McVeigh and the building bombing, whether it's the stop of some serial killers, you know, traffic stops are the bread and butter of our operation. And when you become concerned that you are going to be attacked during, after, and for years following the traffic stop, you're just not doing them anymore. But you know one thing, right? You know you're letting down your community. You know you're letting down your police department. You know you're letting me down because my family is a little bit more unsafe because you're not doing the job that you're supposed to do. Now, you're talking about, that's coming from a trooper. We wrote a lot of tickets. We stopped a lot of people. I had bad incidents. You will have bad incidents. But we can't stop. We can't get people to stop us from doing their job. In fact, here comes the line. You ready, Jake? I'm a little bit of a conspiracy theorist. In fact, I'm a lot of a conspiracy theorist. I think that this is all set on one concept. If we make you concerned, you won't do your job. If you don't do your job, you don't arrest bad people. If you don't arrest bad people, society isn't protected and crime wins. Isn't this the game we're playing? Our job is to be guardians and protect. So let's go back to the little tangent there. Let's go back. Driver stopped by a police officer. What determines the driver's perception of this experience? If you do someday stop somebody, and what are the things that the perception of the person you stop will evaluate during the course of the interaction? Well, extensive research, at least that's what the internet says, extensive research has shown that the driver's perception on the quality of the encounter depends less on its outcome, that is, on whether they have received or not received a ticket, and more on whether they felt treated in a procedurally just way, right? Now, it's no accident that the discussion of procedural justice falls under the first pillar and building trust and legitimacy. The committee in the President's Task Force Committee saw the principle of procedural justice as the most important concept in its report and one that forms the foundation of policing moving forward. The concept of procedural justice is built on four central principles. And I'm going to have Jake put this image up to show you as we work through it. But the four principles are treating people with dignity and respect, giving individuals voice during police encounters, being neutral and transparent in decision-making, and conveying trustworthy motives. So let's go through this little procedural justice image that's going to pop up here, and let's talk about it. Respect. Listen, isn't everything about respect? Teaching internal affairs. Most of our complaints are respect-based. Didn't feel like they were being respected. Listen, you can't make everybody happy, and I am not here to tell you that you have to make everybody happy. I think respect goes both ways. If you want me to treat you respectfully, I expect you to treat me respectfully. But I'm going to tell you, especially for you younger officers, there's something that I learned early on in my career and something that I believe in truly, and that is every interaction starts out the same, and the decision on how that interaction goes is based on the attitude of the individual who I'm dealing with, right? If the individual is going to treat me with respect, I'm going to go out of my way to treat them with respect. If the individual is going to disrespect me, I am going to treat them the way they deserve to be treated. And at some point, if they learn from their mistake and they change their tone to become respectful, I am going to make sure that my tone matches respect. There is no world today that involves swearing, that involves disgust, that involves threats. No world today. You're on videotape. Just do your job. You know, understand something that this job entails, and that is really thick skin. You know, if you're in this job and you don't have thick skin, you probably shouldn't be in the job. It's probably not for you. So respect. All are treated with respect and dignity. Neutrality. Decisions are unbiased and guided by transparent reasoning. Yeah, well, you decide to give a ticket. Why? What was the violation? You decide to make an arrest. Why? What was the probable cause? Why are you arresting me? Well, I shouldn't be afraid to tell them. I should know why I'm telling them. Why are you giving me a ticket? Well, I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you why. You might not like it. You might not agree with it. I'm going to tell you. Voice. And this is something that is an everyday interaction, especially in the younger generation. I'm a little concerned. you know, your discussion, your interpersonal communication skills are a little lacking. And this is a job that requires it. In fact, I say often, I don't know how you do search and seizure without the ability to interact with people. That's the best part of the job. I always used to say, my goal is as if I could get you talking to me, I don't have to worry about a search warrant. I don't have to worry about any of that. I'm going to get you talking to me. I know the law well enough that I'm going to find an exception. I'm going to get in your car, in your bag, in your house, and I'm going to do that clearly and transparently and legally, but I'm going to do that by asking people. But more important, my only advice to you, especially the younger generation, because I see a lot of negative, especially from the older generation, you know, you got to let people tell their side of the story. You might not even care. You might not even want to hear it. It might not even matter. But most of the IA complaints that come into a police department are solely because you didn't give the person the opportunity just to tell their side of the story. You got to do that. You got to let people have a voice. Trustworthiness. You got to convey trust. You got to convey legitimacy in its application. For decades, what we've known on this research has demonstrated that procedural justice is critical for building trust and increasing legitimacy in law enforcement. You know, I look at that sentence and I go, I don't even know what that means. That's very fancy words, right? Research demonstrated procedural justice is critical for building trust and increase the legitimacy of law enforcement authorities within community. Well, we know one thing. Sir Robert Peel said it. The police are the public are the police. We cannot work without true relationships with our public. And one of the things that we know is it doesn't take much to lose the trust. 17,000 police departments, 680,000 cops. Some idiot is going to do something stupid and everyone's going to pay the price for that poor decision. And we know that. Highly publicized abuses of authority by police officers, they fuel distrust and they erode a legitimacy. Less publicized day-to-day interactions between community members and law enforcement are also influential in shaping people's long-term attitudes. See, what I find interesting is all of you are in a job and you've decided to do a job where you don't need daily credit for it, right? This is funny. This is especially when we're dealing with the trophy generation and everybody wants credit for everything. Well, listen, we could probably beat this legitimacy thing, but we don't have the time. Well, what do I mean by that? Hey, I'm working patrol today. I get a call for a child in a medical. I go, I save the child's life. We don't pull out our camera and do a selfie and take a picture. You know, look what I did today. We saved somebody's life. No, we get back in the car. We fill out the report. We wait for the next call. Whether it's a robbery in progress, whether it's a domestic violence situation, whether it's an alarm check, whether it's a checking on somebody's mental health, whatever it is, we just go and do the job. We don't sit there at the end of the day and go, okay, I got 5 important things done for the community today. I need some credit for that. But the people that are taking the credit away only takes one to take all the good credit away. So one of the things that we want to talk about is how do we restore strained community relationships to lay the groundwork for legitimacy? You know, one thing is clear. Police officers are granted legal legitimacy in sense, right? You have the power. Right? Luke, the power is with you. Right? You go out and deal with it. But remember what powers you have there. You have the power to violate people's civil rights. You have the power to take them into custody. You have the power to arrest them. You have the power and authority to use force on them. Up until the point where you have the power and authority to use deadly force on someone. That's a lot of power. That's a lot of authority. And it's a lot of responsibility, especially in an age where we have younger officers and we're losing a lot of our history. What does that power mean to you? And how are you going to use that power with a perception of legitimacy? That's the question of the day. That's what I want you to think about at the end of this podcast. How do you use the power that we've given you, the authority we've given you, with the perception of the legitimacy, which to me means improve compliance and cooperation through improving attitudes. The way that I recommend this is very simple. When I teach at the academy, I tell the students, legitimacy is not a program. It's not a structure. It's not something the chief has to do. Legitimacy is something that you have to do. You earn the right and the authority and have a huge responsibility that every person that you interact with on your on-duty and off-duty life who knows that you're a police officer, that you're going to leave them with an impression. You're going to leave them with an impression of what a police officer is. You're going to leave them with the impression of whether or not you are trustworthy and you have integrity and you have emotion and compassion and empathy. You're going to leave them with that. That's your responsibility. You got to do that. You have to focus on that. And so what I tell young police officers is, don't worry about fixing the big problems. That's the chief's problems. For you, the problem is the thing that you need to fix every day is get out of the damn car and shake some hands. Go see the business owners. Go to the school. Go to the football field. Go to the boys' center and the girls' center. Go do things to interact with the community. Let's not get back to the 80s where we were driving around in cars and nobody got out of them. That's long before community policing began. If you don't want to do police work because you got a fear of what that will lead to, well, that's a problem. But I will tell you, if you're not doing police work, what the hell are you doing? And what you need to be doing is getting out of the car and helping the chief. And what that means is one person at a time, one interaction at a time, one handshake at a time, one, hey, how you doing at a time. And that will help you. You're like, well, Eric, what you just said, help the chief. Yeah, but where do you think you get your crime reports from? Where do you think you get your information from? Where do you think you get your witnesses from? If you don't build up a rapport with the community, how do you expect to enforce the law when the time comes? They don't trust you. They're not going to talk to you. And you can't build trust when you're in the middle of a crappy situation. You got to build that trust beforehand. And you got to spend the energy. I used to say, after Ferguson, when the Ferguson effect kicked in, I would tell police sergeants, yeah, maybe your cops aren't going out doing police work, but what they should be doing is going to put money in the bank. And they look at me and like, what, overtime? No, not overtime. Money in the bank, meaning we're going to need to pull a withdrawal from the bank, the community trust fund, at some point. Well, how does the money get in there? Well, it gets in there one cop at a time, one handshake at a time, one tire change at a time, one crossing an old lady on the road at a time. That's how it gets in there. So if you ain't going to do police work, go fill the bank. Go build the community trust that helps there. As we bring this to a close, I want you to also remember one thing, that there is two types of procedural justice, internal and external. And for all of you that are on this call, all on this podcast, as an external or an internal is your responsibility. If you're a command staff, you got to have the same concept. How do you expect your people to go out in the road and treat the community fairly if they're not treated fairly in their own department? If discipline is not consistent, if supervision is not consistent, if IAs are not consistent, if opportunities are not consistent, there's such a thing as internal procedural justice. We owe that to our employees. Treat them fairly. Give them opportunities and abilities. They have to trust us in order to go out and do the job that you're asking them to do. Internal procedural justice tells us that officers who feel respected by their supervisors and peers are more likely to accept department policies, understand decisions by their executives, and comply with them voluntarily. It follows that officers who feel respected in their organization are more likely to bring this respect to their interactions with the people they serve. And this is just not a police thing. I think it fits for every job description that we'd have. So let's talk about some of the basic concepts. Well, the external component of procedural justice is supported by employing the guardian mindset, as we discussed over the past couple weeks. Agencies' directives that provide guidance to officers to use their authority and discretion will also ensure that citizens see officers' use as they're being treated with dignity and respect. Police civilians will support the police, and they will contribute to the solvability of crimes to the extent they believe the police are legitimate. Remember, there are ways that we can address questioning of motives. our procedures involving eyewitness identification, traffic enforcement, particularly the use of quotas and revenue enhancing practices, and incidents involving police use of force. These are things that detract from our legitimacy that we should pay attention to. So let's give you a real application. The data in here is a little bit dated, but I wanted to use it. Since 1992, the Innocent Project has completed investigations that have resulted in over 300 prisoners being released from over 140 actual offenders identified. Think about that for a second. A group of individuals has gone out across this country, and if you research the Innocence Project, you'll see that their work has gotten over 300 prisoners released from their life sentence. That should be significant. What does that tell us? Well, we talked about authority and ability. Well, sending someone to prison is a very significant issue. The fact that there may be some that were improperly investigated, there may be some procedural errors, there may be some DNA, maybe some technology issues that have enhanced. But the fact is, we have to pay attention to that, and we have to understand that there were some implications. So why did we have the President's Task Force to begin with? In 2015, when the Department of Justice released its report concerning the investigation of Ferguson Police Department, one of the things that they focused on the most was that there was a practice in Ferguson that they considered to be a major factor in building distrust between the police department and the citizens, and that was the department's traffic enforcement activities. And they relied on traffic enforcement activities as a significant revenue source in the city of Ferguson. In fact, the report states that at one point, over 20% of overall revenues were expected to be obtained for the city of Ferguson from violations of municipal ordinances. So traffic enforcement activities were the anchor, or as we know, they should be the anchor for public safety, not for revenue. And that officers were given wide latitude to provide warnings when appropriate, and that's how we do business, but not in Ferguson. In Ferguson, they were funding operations, and as you can imagine, procedural justice was probably not met. There was no trust and legitimacy. There's no neutrality. There was no voice in its application. We know that our legitimacy and our relationship gets tested often. And one of the things I want you to focus on is, what is police legitimacy? It's just so you can take it away. It reflects on a belief that police ought to be allowed to exercise their authority to maintain social order, manage conflicts, and problem solve in their communities. Legitimacy is in three judgments. First and foremost, I always ask a question when dealing with community groups. And the question is a really simple one. Do you want to live in a civilized society? Because if we want to live in a civilized society, then we have to make it civilized, right? And the thing about being civilized is that we know, and history has shown since the beginning of civilization, that civilized societies have to have rules. They have to have order. And the rules have to be one that people follow. And if they don't follow them, there has to be consequences to follow them. And just so that we're clear, rules apply to everybody. They apply to us in law enforcement, and they apply to society. So it's just not one-sided here. We have rules too. And you got to follow the rules. You got to follow the authority or the rules given to the authority that you get. Well, we want to first focus on three things as I leave you here. Number one, public trust and confidence. Confidence involves the belief that the police are honest and they try to do their jobs well. Remember, you don't have to be perfect. You got to do your job to the best of your ability. But what people are looking at, especially people my age and older, is we're looking at your legitimacy is based on the fact that, can you protect community from crime, right? In the town I live in here, we're having a huge break-in problem in cars, right? And I got to be honest with you, I look at the police department in town and say, what are you doing about it? You know, I want to feel safe in my house. I want my kids' cars to be in the driveway and not get broken into. And if I forget to lock the door, which is my mistake, I don't want everything inside the car stolen. That's what I want. And I can't do it. Now we have We have neighborhood patrols out there. No, no, no. This is a police thing. I look at the police chief and say, Chief, what are you doing about this? More importantly, and the chief's going to look at you and say, what are you doing about this? Are you spending your shift sitting behind the firehouse watching Netflix? Or are you patrolling the neighborhood where people can see you? Right? Because I got to tell you, as a community member, I want to live in a safe environment. I can make my house safe, but I can't make my community safe. Only you can. Number two, legitimacy reflects the willingness of residents to defer to the law and police authority. If you're having criminal aspects in your neighborhoods and people aren't talking to you, you got a problem. You don't need a study for that. You don't need a whole group of people to come out and tell you that you got a problem. I'll tell you right now, you got a problem. And the problem is that they don't trust you. And they're not going to talk to you if they don't trust you. So go fix it. You're going to have to deal with the good and the bad. Chief Reynolds and I get to go to a lot of projects where we get yelled at. We've been yelled at in Ferguson. We've been yelled at in Baltimore. We get yelled at everywhere. And the one thing I say is when I go into departments for projects, I say, listen, we got to have a community meeting. And they go, oh, hell no, we're not doing that. Why not? Because we're going to get yelled at. You're right. You're right. You're going to get yelled at. You know why? Because you weren't doing it. And the one thing that we've learned is you're going to yell that the first time and the second time, maybe the third time. Sooner or later, they're going to stop yelling, and then they're going to have some open communications. But the fact that you're willing to take the abuse shows them that you're willing to put the effort in to become better. And finally, the aspect of we have to deal with the issue of racial disparity. And we have to understand that it's hard. One of the hardest things I have is understanding how people feel. Well, I can't understand how people feel. I can only understand how I feel. Well, I can only understand my life, my opportunities, what I've seen. But we have to make sure that we focus on making sure that here's what research says, allegedly, the internet says. Consistently shows that minorities are more likely than whites to view law enforcement as suspicious and distrust. If you don't know me by now, I'm the guy that throws the grenade in the middle of the room. It's the issue. So what do we do about it? Minorities frequently report that police disproportionately single them out because of their race or ethnicity. We have had, and Charlie and I have spent years dealing with stop data. It doesn't mean that the stop is legitimate or illegitimate. And you know what? They still have the right to enforce the law. But there are going to be people looking at, well, why'd you stop this person for this reason at this time in this area? Why'd you do that? And that's the reason why you're not doing it at all, because you're afraid of that question. One of the things that we have to focus on is we have to answer questions. We have to make sure that we can do our best to build this trust. And I'll leave you with this thought process. I truly believe in the concept of banking community trust. And I strongly encourage departments to do programs like Citizen Police Academy or building out special relationships with your leaders in your community, whether it's your community-based or your faith-based or your business-based or your youth-based groups. Relationships are important. You know, as I said last podcast, we know how to fix this. Malcolm Gladwell said, to beat bias, you must use contact theory, which means you have to make contact with people and you have to build that trust one person at a time. That's your mission. That's your responsibility. It's not the chief's job. It's not the captain's job. They got their own job. On the street, it's your job. And together, if everybody in that department just puts in a little effort, you build that bank. And someday when that bad thing happens, because there's one thing I can promise you, it's going to happen. It happens all the time. Then you go and you do a withdrawal and you reach out to your faith-based, your community-based, your business-based, your youth-based leaders, and you ask them to give you a little bit of trust that you will investigate it correctly. You will handle it correctly. That's the way forward. That's the way we ensure an application of guardian mindset that becomes successful and makes you a better police officer. So with that, I leave you. Help those who need your help. Protect those who need your protection. And most important, keep yourself and others safe. Be well.